You are listening to The New Day, Feel the Power. Here's one of our favorite episodes, and you can check out more from the archives on Spotify, baby.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
Welcome to the greatest podcast of all time, which is entitled The New Day.
Feel the power,
baby. Yeah. I am Xavier Woods.
I am Big E.
And I am Kofi Kingston.
And ladies and gentlemen, I don't know how we managed to be so lucky to get the guest that we have here today. A man who has fought through trials and tribulations, being yelled at, being spit on, only to rise above like a phoenix from the ashes, to become a WWE World Heavyweight Champion, to become an A-list movie star, to hosting his own game show, Cannonball. Ladies and gentlemen, we are fortunate to have time today on this podcast with the one, the only, The Miz.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Oh. What an amazing introduction. And by the way, your guys' voices are incredible. I mean, there's no auto-tune whatsoever on those bad boys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's
thank
you. All natural. You know how we do around here.
Let me ask you a question. So when you guys were deciding to do this podcast, you said, well, we need an entrance. I know you have the, oh, wherever we're at. I know that's your entrance for WWE. What made you think of this entrance?
Well, we were forced into this, actually. So because since the pandemic, doing it remotely, we can't yell as much. And it used to be a lot more yelling. It used to be The New Day, Feel the Power, with a lot of yelling, but it blows out the mics. So now we just do weird stuff and kind of sing-songing.
All right.
So that's how it starts.
Okay.
Not an exciting story.
If you're looking for a great story, that wasn't it.
Just trying to not blow the mics out.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire. You're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com. This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles, from executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
So before we started, we talked about a few things. The first thing that I want to touch on before we go into all the stuff we actually want to talk
about. Touch on him now.
I'm a touch. I get real handsy. So you're talking about the fact that in your house, you have a place prepared for when you eventually win the up, up, down, down championship.
100%.
It's that 100%. Serious for you.
I have like a trophy room, right? So it's like my billiards room, and it's where you play all your games. And, you know, they have like a built-in like shelf. And on that shelf is WWE Championship, Intercontinental, United States, all the tag teams, by the way, like even the old school ones that I won with like Morrison back in like 2008. So I have all those lined up. And there is one spot dedicated for the up, up, down, down championship, because I will win the up, up, down, down championship. Oh, wow. And so I have had this vacant little area, like every time I've challenged for the title, I'm like thinking, I sit there and look at it and I go, yep, it's going there. I can't wait. And then I end up losing because we play some random game that nobody's even ever heard of before. And I end up losing and then get roasted usually. by everyone because everyone wants me to lose. But I feel like I'm like an underdog story now. And I feel like people are starting to gravitate towards me to go, we want the Miz to be up, up, down, down champion. Like, I feel like I'm getting to that. Like, nobody wants Breeze as the champion. He's like the ultimate heel.
I will say, yes, no one wants Breeze as the champion.
Yeah, I was going to agree on that, too. I feel like no one does want Breeze as the champion, right? That's never indisputable, right?
I never thought I'd see the day where Miz would be a sympathetic figure in any realm, in life, in wrestling. But here we are.
You guys have no idea what I've been through on Up, Up, Down, Down. I have dedicated. I have fought. I have strived to get to that top-notch area. And every time I come up short, and people love an underdog story, and believe it or not, I am the underdog story in Up, Up, Down, Down. There is no doubt in my mind. There is no bigger underdog in Up, Up, Down, Down's history than The Miz.
Wow.
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
Think of one.
Mikazi.
No. Are you kidding me?
Bro,
he like won on the first try. Like, isn't he the first champion?
He's the first champion. Nobody
expected him to win. Everybody was dumping on Mikazi, just like birds in the sky looking for him, just dumping on him all over him. And he somehow pulled it out, you know, and then defended it too. I don't know.
But the thing is, I'm saying right now, he's already been champion. Once you're a champion, you're not an underdog anymore.
Okay.
You're a former champion. Okay. I am not a former champion. I need to become a former champion of Up, Up, Down, Down to take away my underdog story. So right now, I am the ultimate underdog, and I love being it, and I'll play the role.
The thing that's interesting to me about this is like we made this stuff up, and we talked about this before. So Kofi lost and wasn't the Up, Up, Down, Down champion going into Mania when he was wrestling Daniel Bryan the next day to become the heavyweight champion, the most important match possibly of his career. And he's texting me at like 2 a.m. trying to figure out, hey, can I come over and we can go knock on Mikazi's door and I can challenge for the title.
What are the parameters behind the challenge? When can I challenge him whenever I want? Bro, it's the realest title in the game, man. It's the realest title in the game. You start playing for the title, you know how it is. And you're like, have like a little title match. Like the butterflies in my stomach that I get competing for the Up, Up, Down, Down championship is unlike anything I've ever experienced in the business at all. Like bar none. And then I get so mad. You know, like it's like real, and like when as soon as the cameras go off, I'm just sitting there like just stewing. You know what I mean? And it's a game, right? Games are supposed to be fun. I'm just like, that wasn't fun. Was that fun?
Oh, it will ruin my week. Like not just like my day, my hour, like my minute. Like it ruins my entire week. And like last time I faced Breeze for the title, my wife yelled at me, which went viral. Thanks. Yeah. Literally, I had to like film some stuff afterwards, and I go, "You guys got to give me a minute." I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, I just need a minute. Like, I need to, you know, and because the thing is, you're talking about the butterflies, right? So I get the butterflies, and the worst I get them is right before we pick the game because you don't know what game you're getting,
right.
And I know it's a game I never even heard of before, always. Or a game that I'm like, they have a video game for this? I didn't even know that. And then you have to figure out how to play the game while like playing for a championship. Like never in the history of championships, usually you're able to focus, hone in, know exactly what you're going into. You don't know what you're going into an Up, Up, Down, Down championship. And that's what makes it so fun, but so nerve-wracking in the same sense.
It's fun. It's nerve-wracking. And then you just get like so mad. Why do you make me play that game? I don't play bowling. Why am I playing bowling for the championship? I should be playing. You know what I mean? Like, I got to calm down sometimes, man.
and then all your friends are there like making fun of you because you lost. And it's just there's no bigger hurt than losing. And then on top of that, having everyone tell you how poorly you played a game that you never played before, like a game you never trained for. Like you, and then you sit there and think about it. Like maybe if I get better at this game, I can actually win the Up, Up, Down. No, because you're not playing it the next time.
You'll never play it again.
I can't work to get better at video games I've never played before. The only way to get better on Up and Down is if you played every single game in the books. And nobody has done that. Not even you, Woods.
No one could.
Good. Is there like a general skill set? Maybe it's a hand-eye coordination thing. Maybe there's like a general, like you just work on maybe thumb dexterity. Something.
Have you seen me in the ring? Like I have great hand-eye coordination. When people look at me, they go, Mr. Coordination.
Hey, speaking of, what was it like? Oh my, I think it was like maybe 2 weeks after Mania or something like that. You went to go do a nip up? right?
Yep, thank you.
Stumbled all the way back down and like, oh my God.
Jomo goes, you should do a kip up there. And I go, dude, I'm not very good at it. He goes, no, you can do it. You can do it. And I go, I'm not really good at them. Like, I remember back when Tough Enough was first coming out. And did you remember, like, I don't know if you guys watched, but I watched Tough Enough on MTV, mm-hmm. where you could win a WWE contract and they would have people in the ring and they would test them out. They would make them do some physical activities. And one of them was a kip up. And I was like, oh man, like if I ever tried for this, I'm going to learn how to do a kip up. So every night before I go to bed, I try to do 10 kip ups and I can never get them ever. I just think it's my hips. I've had people try to train me to do kip ups. It just never works. So for Morrison to sit there and go, you can do it. And then me to actually think like, this is what Morrison has over me. Like Morrison will go, dude, you can do it. And I'll go, you know, maybe I can. Yeah, I can do it. Yeah, that's right. I can do it. And then I do it and I make an ass of myself. And now it went viral. And now every time someone does a kip up, they go, who did it better? And it's always, I look like the idiot. Like, I remember the last one was like, Lacey Evans did a kip up. And they're like, who did it better, Lacey Evans or The Miz? And I'm like, you know what? I get it, okay? The guy can't do a kip up. There's no hand-eye coordination in kip ups anyway. Just so everyone knows.
Yeah.
I had that same relationship with Kofi.
Yes.
Because I was trying to do something in the ring. We were practicing and he was like, yeah, you can do that. And I was like, okay. Right after I did, high ankle sprain, out for 3 months.
Yeah, sounds about right, right?
I know my limitations.
I will say, though, we had, was it the match at Elimination Chamber where a bunch of people messed up their springboards, but not The Miz. Miz was the one person who nailed his springboard. So.
That's your move, man. I will say that because I think there was a couple of times where you were practicing before, so to do the springboard, and literally everybody comes out and they're surrounding the ring. We're like, oh, here we go. Miz about to bust his in the ring in front of everybody. And there you nailed it, man. I feel like I've never seen you actually like trip on a springboard. Congratulations.
I have done it once or twice, but now, I mean, I couldn't believe that you tripped. I don't think you tripped. I think it was your shoes. Like your shoes were slipping or something that day because you were all over the place in the Elimination Chamber. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was bad. I forget.
Like you slipped like 3 times that day.
I think it was, it might have been two. It might have been two or something like that. But yeah, I forget what it was. The sneakers I was wearing didn't have any kind of traction. And I had no business wearing them in the ring. But good camera cutaways. Fix that.
That's right. And I'll tell you, they didn't need to cut away from me. Actually, extreme close-up because I nailed my amazing springboard double axe handle off the top. Boom.
Double axe.
There you go.
So people who are friends with you, they know you like to talk and you like some good banter from time to time, most of the time. I'm going to throw this to E because E's initial thoughts of you when he saw this banter.
Well, so every time we do a podcast, our producer's always asking us for notes. And sometimes, like, we know you. And I was like, okay, The Miz loves to talk and it'll be fine. We don't really have to have many notes. But I was just struggling to think of things. And I just wrote this down just because it was a thought that came to mind. I didn't know if it was something that needed to be said. But I will say, I think we have a pretty good rapport. I'm not going to say we're the best of friends and hang out or anything. But I think we have a pretty good rapport and have had one for the last several years. But I will say, when I first came to the main roster in 2012, I would describe you as someone who could be quite petulant, someone who was pretty annoying. I remember you would just do something. I think we were on a bus one time and it was like you were 10 years old. You were like poking at me or just something, you know, the repetitive, like, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching. It was something like that. It was like, oh, this man is a child. And I didn't even know you that well. And that was my first impression of you. And I say that freely now because I feel like we're on good footing now and we've been on good footing now for quite some time. But I will say, for me, at least, I think I didn't really express this, but I think I silently stewed while this was happening. But I will say it didn't get off to the cleanest of starts for me. But I also said, so when I talked to our producer, I said, you know, I don't know if this is something that we need to talk about. And he's like, oh, maybe not. But I was like, oh, you know, The Miz knows he's annoying. So I don't think it's a big thing.
Oh,
I
don't
think
you don't understand. Yeah. Like my entire life, I would say I make a poor first impression, like almost 90% of it. And I don't know why. I think it's because I'm too much. Like sometimes I think like my positives are my negatives. Like I'm a lot to digest. And sometimes my energy is too much. And if I find a button, I'm going to push it and I'm going to keep pushing it. And I didn't realize where I got that from until my dad started doing it to me when I was like 37. We were at a eating dinner somewhere and my dad was doing something and it was really annoying me. And I go, why are you doing this? And he literally just kept doing it, And I went, oh my, and then in my head, I went, oh my God, I do this. My father, is this where I got it from? Is this what happens? No, I get that all the time. Like it's one of those things. Like I'm just a lot to take in, I think. And if I find a button, I push it. And I don't know why until I didn't know why until my dad started doing it to me. And it's something that I was brought up with, I guess.
Wow. But at least you learned about yourself. That's yeah. At 37, the fact that you learned, that's pretty, yeah. That's big.
I'm always learning new things about myself.
We were also talking about before we got on, you know, so you're talking about E's turning on his kitchen lights, you know, he's got the bachelor pad, lives alone. And you also talked about, like you said, Marie screaming at you. So how has this been in quarantine, you know? A bachelor style of quarantine is going to be much different than married with children style of quarantine.
Well, so you have to put this in proper perspective, though. You can't just say Maurice yells at you, okay? So we were playing the championship for the up, up, down, down, and I was playing in my bedroom. Now, everyone knows I'm very loud. I'm just a loud person in general. My voice projects. And when I play video games, I become extra loud, like almost at 110%. My children were sleeping and taking a nap. And we all know, Biggie does not know this, but when you have kids and they are taking a nap, no one better make a peep because it's nap time and it's the only time you can have silence in your household. And so, you know, my wife is an incredible mom, but if you literally, and to her credit, she is an incredible mother because I'm loud and I forget sometimes that, you know, my kids are sleeping. She'll allow me to know that, yo, the kids are sleeping. If you make another peep, I'm going to really be angry. And you don't want to make your wife angry, especially when your kids are napping.
I can attest I've almost been slapped many a time for screaming at the top of my lungs during nap time and not realizing as well.
For me, it's not even screaming. Sometimes like at night, I'm not allowed to like do the dishes at night anymore because like the
clean, this is a clean, thing that you're doing. Dishes, it's like a chore that you're doing. It's a nice thing to do.
Yeah. I think I'm doing something nice. So she wakes up in the morning, the dishes are done. And then I come out and, you know, she comes out and she's like, no, you can't be making that. That's the worst sound ever. You know, it wakes up the kids. It's too high pitched. I said, like, babe, I'm literally like placing the plate on top of another one as gently as I possibly can. There's no way that he can hear that, right? There's no way, but I can't argue. You know what I'm saying? Like, no. She's got to be the one to go back in there and like put them back to sleep. So I'm like, you know
I have done the same thing. Yeah. Like legit the same thing. Like if I put my plate in the sink and it hits another plate, oh, holy hell, it's about to like break out in our house.
What are you doing?
I'm just putting my plate in the sink. Like I'm cleaning up my plates. Like, what do you mean you clean up your plates? Why are you gonna, you set them down, you place them. I'm like, I did place it. I don't know what you're saying. Why are you making so much noise doing it? I'm like, are you making so much? And by the way, we're yelling like this. I don't understand. It's literally we become pros like that. I mean, do you guys get
the quiet kind of
arguments? 100%.
Like, I'm trying so much. Mm-hmm. And you want to yell, but you can't because the kids are sleeping.
You can't.
No, the amount of quiet arguments. Yeah. Yes. The quiet arguments have happened, especially like during quarantine, because we're just on top of each other the whole time. It's like, what are you doing? Don't do that. No, why would you even think that's a good idea? I'm like, I'm so sorry. What did I do? But then I'm getting fired up. No, I'm trying to do a good thing. It's like, no, but your good thing is doing a bad thing. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry.
And Biggie's just sitting there going, I don't have this problem.
Just making all the noise, whatever you want.
Yeah,
just
clank my dishes. Right now.
Throw them in the dishwasher.
What would happen? I could never do a podcast in a kitchen, ever. That's where the kids are. That's where the moms are. That's where Maurice is. Like, that's where my dogs and cats are. I have to go to the guest house in order to get anything done. And this is, and honestly, I'm just waiting for my daughter to walk in here and just go, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, daddy's working. Daddy's on a podcast right now. She doesn't care. She doesn't know what it is.
Oh, no.
That's your button. She's going to push it.
Oh, yeah. She's learning from the best.
So we spoke on your athletic prowess. You're able to hit these
sprints. I'm an athlete.
just an athletic maniac in the ring. Do you feel that that skill and athleticism translates to the basketball court?
I didn't know where this podcast was gonna go. And of course you went for it, huh? And I imagine you probably have the footage because we filmed the whole thing. And look, me and Kofi, anytime we are at a gym and I see Kofi and there's a basketball court, we're playing basketball. It's just whether you're done with your, whether you just started your workout or you just finished legs, it doesn't matter. We are playing basketball. And Kofi has beaten me many times. Like there was a time where there was like 100 people watching us play basketball one-on-one.
It was the worst display of basketball
you have ever seen in your entire life. Like at first, the kids were like, dude, this is the best game ever. Kofi and the Miz are going at it. By the end, people were leaving. Like this is what we get. Like you guys are like really good WWE superstars, but basketball, oh my God.
I was there that day. Horrible, horrible display.
I feel like we've talked about this on the podcast like no less than 5 times on the, you know, the duration of the podcast. We bring it up all the time. But I'm like, you know what? Let's have Miz on there and have him tell like his side of the story. Cause maybe like, maybe he saw it differently. You know, like maybe it was a little bit different. Maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought, but I don't know.
I remember the ball going off my foot. And like 100 times, like I remember a time where we were playing and I drained like we were playing ones and twos. So I was draining twos like it was going out of style. Like I was up 10-1, like no doubt. And I was like, dude, I was laughing. I was like, this is so easy. This cakewalk, just drain them. I miss one. Kofi gets the rebound, never got the ball back again. Kofi ended up beating me like by 2 because it, you know, you had 12-10 or 13-11, right, something like that. But it was very embarrassing. And yeah, I've had many embarrassing moments playing basketball. I think probably the most embarrassing was I used to bring a guitar on the road. And because I wanted to learn how to play a guitar. And I was the worst guitar player ever. Like I would like, you know how I like saying I push buttons. Pushing some buttons would be like we're driving long roads and I would just be jamming back and not playing any songs, just trying to learn how to play just any type of beat whatsoever. So we made a bet, like whoever wins, I don't remember what I got to do, but Kofi got to sign my guitar. And so we played the game. Kofi ended up winning and he signed my guitar. And then I left that guitar in a rental car.
Yeah. On purpose?
It was never to be seen again. Yeah. And I bought a new guitar so I didn't have to have Kofi's name on my guitar all the time.
Bro, it was, and so I forgot about this too, because there was one point where it was like me, you, and Hornswoggle, we would travel together, right? Like for an extended period of time. And then like Evan was with us at one point, Evan Bourne. But yeah, you were so proud of that guitar, man. I remember you being on the road and like you were taking lessons at home with like the guitar wizard or something. What was
it? Shred Mistress.
Yeah, the Shred Mistress. And you're like, oh, I created my own tablature and this and that. And you were just so proud about like playing your guitar. And Hornswoggle would set you up. He's like, oh my God, Miz, it sounds like you've gotten better. And you'd be like, oh yeah, thanks, man. I've really been practicing. And Hornswoggle will cut you off and say, if by better, you mean worse. And just, you'd see the joy just fall out of your face. Oh my God.
But the thing is, he would do that. I would get caught with that same joke, like every week. Every single week, we'd get in the car. He'd tell me how good I'm getting. And I actually believe I'm actually getting better. Like, and I'm like, oh yeah, I am, you know? And he's like, if, and I'm like, oh,
every time, just setting them up. Oh my God, gosh, there was even like that one time too, I think we were in Canada and we pulled up, you were driving, we went to go get gas. The hotel was like across, there was a big field, probably like a 50-yard field. And then the hotel in between the gas station and the hotel. So you were driving the car, you went to get gas and then you go back into the store to go get something. Hornswoggle jumps out, gets in the front seat, and drives the car off. I go, oh my God, like where are we go? He and I'm like, okay, joke's over, man. You're gonna go pick Miz up, right? He parked the car back at the hotel. And now we're sitting there, we watch you come out of the gas station and you're looking left and right, hands on the hips. You see the car all the way across the field, and then you proceed to have to walk all the way to the car. Bro, we were laughing our ass off in the car. It was so funny.
It was very muddy that day. And yeah, and I honestly thought that he was actually going to come. I was like, oh, they'll come pick me up. No, they'll come pick. 5 minutes goes by, 10 minutes. I go, you know what? The hotel's right there. I guess I'll walk it. And then I walk it, and it's through sludge and puddles and disgust. And yeah,
just nasty.
That did happen 100%.
Horrible. But going back to like the basketball games too. So as far as the reason why, like, to lose to you. So I feel like, and this goes for like video games, athletic, whatever, any kind of contest, to beat you is the best ever, because I feel like you like to run your mouth a lot. You like to talk a lot. And when you beat you, it's like, you know what I mean? Like it's elated. I'm elated about it. But to lose to you, I would never hear the end of it. We'd be sitting here on this podcast right now telling a different story. I feel like you would have never played me again.
Sounds familiar.
100%. I'm waiting for the moment that I beat you. And literally, you will never beat me again, because you will never play me again.
Bro.
And you will have to hear about it for the rest of your life, how I beat you at basketball. Like
that was the stress, dude. Like when I was down like 10-0, I'm like, I'm having like a literal, like a panic attack on the court. I'm like, I cannot lose this game. I'll never hear the, I can't lose to the Bulls. What's everyone going to say?
You get so pumped up in a game in my entire life. Like, when you go for a rebound, you jump up. Kofi was like hitting the rim. He was like LeBron James. I would do like an Allen Iverson, not really, like crossover, start going to the rim, go to do a layup, and Kofi would be right there. Bow! LeBron James and me off the backboard, just swatting me. Left him, like, I've never seen him try so hard in my entire life at anything.
I don't think
anything. Than that one game. That one game, he was not going to let me. And I was mouthing off because I was 10. It was 10-1. I was so loud. Bad. I was obnoxious. But Kobe just remained focused. He didn't even let me in. That's how focused he was.
What I want for this, I want footage of this game as you're describing your Allen Iverson crossover. Actually see what's happening. I want also footage to accompany when Kofi had his LeBron James blood. Yes. It's like us when we do the frog pose and we think that we're 6 feet in the air. Yeah. When you actually watch it, Kofi jumps 2 inches, stumbling around. In your mind, you think you're just killing it, but in actuality, oh, it's a hot mess.
But that's, so to that point, like we that's what we do. We embellish things a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like the first time that I was there for the basketball game, like I recorded footage, but then I wrote an article on it and they put it on .com just describing this epic basketball game. And then I remember, I think I showed Pelagato, he works in digital, he helped me get it on .com. I showed him the footage. He goes, is this a different game? No, this is the one I wrote about. It's like, they don't really match up, buddy.
The sad part is, we talk so much smack that you think that this is the most epic basketball game you will ever see. Like, you think two pros are going on the court, and you're wondering why they aren't in the NBA the way they're talking. Play like 5-year-olds could beat us.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over 2 decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth, so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on one suite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer.
Staying on course with your athletic prowess, Ms., you're a man of many nicknames. Big Trap Mike. And this is real... It's real dumb, but so most of the time when I see you in the locker room, especially if you're shirtless, if you're spray tanning or something, I like gassing you up with your Big Trap Mike nickname. I don't even know why this started or where it started, but I do appreciate that when I say it, you'll just flex your traps, walk around like you're 300 pounds, and it's real dumb, but it brings a smile to my face. So I appreciate
honestly,
that.
I think it started where you were in the gym probably doing traps, and I was like, all right. Let Big Trap Mike get in here. All right, let's do it. And then it just stuck. So there's also Big Fat Mike for whenever I feel like really like eating just like a pizza or like some crap. I'm like, yeah, I feel like Big Fat Mike, you know, Big Trap Mike. I make up so many names for myself. It's not even funny. Like that's kind of all I do is like whenever we're shooting Ms. and Mrs., Maurice will be doing an interview and Maurice will be like, really? That? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where it came from. It just happens.
Splendid. I like it. I support it. I do.
Big Trap Mike, man. Like, the problem is, like, so with working out, like, I don't like working out. Like, people like working out. Like, I used to like working out when I was in my 20s. When I get to my 30s, I can't stand it. It's a job. But it is a job. It's a 100% job because my job requires me to have some athletic ability. And so I basically, and you have to be physically fit. Like I always think like a champion needs to look like a champion, needs to act like a champion, needs to walk, talk, act like a champion. So like ever since I hit like 39, my energy has gone way low. And having kids, like getting into the gym is difficult. But like, so I had to like hire a trainer. I hired a nutritionist. I hired a chef that literally brings me my food because if they don't, I'm eating my kids' food. I'm eating chicken nuggets. I'm eating cheeseburgers. I'm eating Pogos like that. I'm eating crap foods. So I literally, this is the first year where I really honed in and said, Mike, you can't let yourself go. Like you want to be a champion. You want to be a superstar. You want to be as big. And the thing is like, I always look at it like I'm a representative. I'm a representative. When people see me with a championship, they need to be like, wow, that guy is a champion. Whether we joke around and believe it or not, that's just my mindset of the way I work. So literally I got a chef that got me gluten-free and she got me off of gluten, off of cheeses, off of dairy. And honestly, I felt my face become less bloated. My belly is less bloated just from not eating gluten. Like I didn't know what gluten is. Like gluten is, but I stopped doing it. And then my trainer is like, dude, you're training too much. Like on a given day, like I would do like 5 chest exercises to make sure my chest was extra swollen. And then I'd get so tired that my chest would be so sore that I would not be able to work out for the next like 3 days because I couldn't move. Like I'd do legs or something. He's like, you need to like pace yourself. You're no longer 20 something. You're 39 years old. You need to work out like you're 39 years old. But obviously, we're going to get you into shape where you feel like you have more energy and you could do more things. Because honestly, having kids, oh my, it takes every ounce of that you had spare time of. Like Biggie, think of your day. Think of all the spare time you have in your day. That is gone, gone. And you won't listen to it. Like when I have friends that would tell me like, yeah, dude. I got kids. I can't come out today. I can't play. I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't do anything. I'd be like, why? What is wrong with you? Why can't you just let them go with the babysitter? Let them do this. Let them do this. And now I understand I was wrong. And I have apologized to every friend that I've had with kids because I didn't get it. And you won't get it unless you have them. Your spare moments are gone. Your alone time is gone. Mm-hmm. You have to find time to work out. Am I wrong?
No, just like your last name, E. You just show up one day and it's gone. Same thing. Just like last name, gone.
You hold the baby right out the womb. Maybe you cut the umbilical cord. You're like, oh my God, my whole life has changed. And then your second thought is, oh my God, my whole life has changed.
And then you're up at 4 o'clock in the morning because your kid is can't sleep and you're just doing this. Mm-hmm. Like last night, Madison woke up 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, oh, come on. Tried to feed her. Doesn't want to be fed. Changed her. Still crying. Pick her up. Doing this. Okay. Okay. She's sleeping. Oh, she's sleeping. Oh, I got it. Okay, good. Good. Okay. Here we go. Boom. Set her down. Start walking back. I lay in my bed. Swear to you. Starts crying again. And I'm like, should I leave her? And I'm like, I can't. I just can't. Like some people are like, you know, they need to develop and like, you know, be able to sleep. Even if they're crying, they need to get themselves to sleep. And I'm like, look, if my kid's crying, I'm going to try and not make them not cry. So there I am again, 4:15, doing this. Like till 4:45, my arm's tired, my back's tired, my legs are tired. I worked out legs yesterday too, so I can't even walk. Yeah.
But the thing that's great about it is because I feel like there's lots of people who don't understand. They're like, oh, well, like if it's such a hassle, why would you have kids? It's like, because it's like the most rewarding thing on the face of the planet.
Right.
But even the like with that fact that you're doing so much stuff, you were doing so much stuff before you had kids. You were the guy like, I'm going to be weird for a second, but once I found out like the things that you'd actually been through to get to where you are and how hard you actually hustle, like you became like one of my favorite humans that I'd ever got the chance to work with because you're like that shining beacon of like burning the candle from both ends and the middle and still making it all work at the same time. So the fact that you were so busy before you had kids and now you do have kids and it seems like you're even more busy, like how are you able to balance all of those things and be successful in every arena that you're stepping into?
This is the busiest I've ever been in my entire life. And right now, you know, a lot of things are happening with the pandemic and with COVID and a lot of people are like out of work. And like me, I'm working triple, like, so I'll give you a, for instance, last week we were filming the last episodes of Ms. and Mrs. Like we have to get a whole protocol that we have to go through for safeties and regulations and making sure that everyone feels safe with filming. And so we're doing Ms. and Mrs. Not only that, but Cannonball, I need to finish voiceovers for Cannonball for the last two episodes. And these voiceovers take like 3.5 hours to do an episode. So not only that, I was doing also media. So I would wake up at like 5:45 and then at 6 a.m. I was on the phone until like noon doing radio interviews. And then the next day I was doing a satellite tour for TV interviews because, you know, NBC is really like behind, USA and NBC is really behind the show, which I was like, I've never seen promotion for a show like this ever. Like not WWE, not Ms. and Mrs. Like they are pulling out all stops for Cannonball. And, you know, it's great, but it's just a lot of work. Like I remember, like I had to do two episodes of Cannonball back to back and that's 7 hours of talking. Now I can talk for a long time, but you literally need to find your voice. Like I'm yelling, I'm going 3, 2, 1, Cannonball, you know, like I'm yelling. So that's 7 hours of that. But then the day before I had 4 hours of Ms. and Mrs. interviews where we're sitting down and it's like where you see us and was like, well, you know, Maurice didn't like what I said there. So, you know, whatever. And so I did 3 hours of that the day before. So my voice was absolutely shot. And they're like, and I'm just drinking water. I have like this thing called singer's voice that I spray in my throat so I can actually get it done. But it's all time management. And then also, like, I want to be a good dad. Like, I don't want to be the dad that my daughters are like, where's Dada? Where's Dada? Dada's gone. Dada's always gone. I don't want them to say that. Like, I want them to be like, who taught you how to swim? Dada. Who taught you how to walk, how to run, how to play basketball, how to play baseball, like how to do all these
sports. Maybe not basketball.
Maybe not basketball. Right. Actually, here at the Mazzana household, the basketball hoop's like 7 foot, so I can dunk on it.
Oh. So it's kinda nice. They're just in awe. Oh my God.
Yeah, daddy can dunk. But like, honestly, I think it's with all of us though. I think all of us have a mentality where we're just trying to do our best for not only us to keep our minds safe, but also for our families. Like, you know, we're working hard. Like you're doing up, up, down, down. You're working very, very hard to get a successful show off the ground. And by the way, it is successful. Not only that, I think you are going to be G4's new host.
Creed for G4, baby.
I hope so. Let's I'm trying to push too hard. You know, Creed for G4, help your boy out. Let me get a hosting gig.
Hey, let me point out something real quick. Okay, so this might end up being a little bit like twofold and long-winded. It's already long-winded because I'm asked. Anyway.
By the way, have you not heard my answers? They literally go for 10 minutes.
So check this out, man. So this is the question that I think a lot of people want to know. So, you know, if anyone could be considered to be like Mr. Hollywood on the roster, that'd be you, you know, right? Even look at your shirt right now. Is that Gucci or is that Chanel?
This is Gucci.
It's Gucci. It is Gucci. You got a Gucci blazer on, you know, in an amazing pattern. You know, you're always dressed to the gills. I'd like to talk about a time where you would wear a certain outfit to the ring. You had what looked to be like Jenko shorts, Doc Martin boots, the socks coming out of the boots. You had a shirt that said a chick magnet on it, plain and gray with a magnet pointing to a chick. And then you also had a fedora, but underneath that fedora was a bandana. You had your finger gloves on as well. And to me, I don't know much about style per se, but I don't know if I would call that a stylish look. So I think the question that I wanted to ask, and I think that a lot of people want to know, is what was the inspiration behind that outfit? It seems very controversial to somebody who has a lot of style now.
Obviously, you've never been to Melrose. If you have been on Melrose, then you would know that was the coolest thing ever. Actually, the way I got that style, like that was basically the first outfits I wore in WWE. And the first ones at OVW that I got, I actually made them. Like I painted them. I made them. I did everything for them. And so I didn't want to look like a stereotypical wrestler. Like I wanted to look different than everybody else. And so everything just started happening. So I had these socks and I was like, oh, I can wear these knee pads with these socks and that'll be, and I wanted to basically people look at me and go, this guy, I don't like him right away. Like, I wanted just to be like, I don't like this guy. I remember wearing, I was testing something out and I wore a bandana with a fedora on it because I saw Kevin Federline wearing it. And I was like, nobody likes him. So maybe that's why. And so I wore it and everybody in WWE made fun of it or made a comment about it. And so I was like, huh, I'm wearing this from now on because if WWE superstars can't stand it and hate it and make fun of it, guess who else is going to do that? The WWE universe. And honestly, it was successful up until the Calgary Kid. And right. The way that came about was we were doing Summerfest, as Jeremy Piven put it. I say Jeremy Piven because he fired me from WWE. Jeremy Piven, when he was a guest host on, I think it was Raw, he fired me. And the next week, I was in a contract on a pole match, but it wasn't me. It was the Calgary Kid. I came out with a mask with a Canadian. By the way, we were in Calgary. Because so people would do it. It was me versus Eugene, and it was contract on a pole match, and nobody knew it was me. And the only way you would not know it's me is I was not going to wear the shorts. I was going to wear the fedora, no gloves. I was going to look completely different. I was going to look like a stereotypical like luchador wrestler, where you have Speedo tights, you know, kick pads. You know, I had the face mask on, so you couldn't tell it was me. I worked differently, and at the end, I won the contract on a pole match. And when I took off that mask, everyone didn't know it was me, and the entire arena erupted in boos because I wasn't the Calgary Kid, one of them didn't make it. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. Sorry, USA. The next day, hey, Miz, Vince thinks you got great legs. We think you should start wearing trunks from now on. And I'm like, no, like the whole point of my style is that I wanted to be different than everybody else. I didn't want to be your quote unquote stereotypical wrestler. You know, I wanted to be different than everybody. And so they won that argument, and I'm kind of glad I actually did it because it, like, I don't know, it got me out of that whole thing. But my whole reasoning for everything that I wear is I want kids to be able to wear it and kids to be able to dress up like me for Halloween. So that's why I do all these big like coats and like the kid Karate Kid, like literally headband, big sunglasses, like. I do all that stuff so literally kids can wear it. Like kind of like what you guys do. You guys do it better than anybody. You guys know how to, I mean, who would have thunk wearing a light on your head that's a unicorn would literally be the biggest seller one year?
Very dumb. Very, very dumb.
But yeah, that's dumb, but great. every kid wanted one. Every time, like, really well. I remember any time I'd bring like some of my friends' kids backstage, you'd be like, can we get one of those unicorn thingies you put on your forehead? I'm like, really? That's what you want? Yes, I would really like to light up the unicorn thingy on my forehead.
Kids sound excited. They see
grown men, enthusiastic. Grown men in audience wearing unicorn. Like honestly, like crazy. Yeah. It's the stupidest stuff gets over.
I had a similar conversation. And so I know your pain because when I came up on the main roster, I was wearing a singlet and, you know, it would end up. So my cheeks were thoroughly covered. And I tried to explain to them that this is going to be a bad idea because I am a man who has been blessed with a lot of I got a lot of back there and it needs to be covered up. And from time to time, people will send me videos or pictures of me. And it's me. And I'm trying to be a menacing heel at this point in my life. And it's just I'm double cheeked up on a Sunday. So I think I don't remember because it's kind of one of those things that you need to kind of slide by him. I think it's one of those things after a few months, I realized this is ridiculous. I'm getting nowhere with this. I think I just slowly started bringing it back and I would have the normal cut singlet, but I would hike it up a little bit. So it still like looked like I had a similar Taz cut singlet. And then eventually it just came down lower and lower and lower until no one said anything. And I think he lost interest in seeing my legs too. But yeah, I remember that conversation and it was traumatic for me actually just hearing you talk about the you got great legs story again. It traumatized me for a moment. So I understand. I get it.
Oh no.
But yeah, it worked out. Like you said, you're trying to make sure that you are memorable to people. And the easiest way to know that you're memorable is if someone can poke fun at you. And I feel like there are many people who come through the wrestling industry who take stuff like that to heart and they don't understand that aspect of it. They go, oh, they're making fun of me. Maybe, you know, I don't want to be personally attacked. And it's like, no. In wrestling, like you have to have the door wide open to all of that and allow that in because that makes the relationship, then the bond that you're able to create so much stronger. And you're a guy who clearly knows and understands that and has used that to your advantage in the ring.
Here's another stupid story, if you don't mind me. If you just triggered something. So with the shirt, the chick magnet, that was my gimmick. My gimmick was the chick magnet back then. That's what I was when I was going to ECW. And one of the writers, the head writer said, hey, here's a book. It was called The Game by Neil Strauss. Read it. This is your character. And so this was like a pickup artist book. It teaches you how to pick up women. And so one of the thing was peacocking. And peacocking is wearing something like weird to a club. And honestly, it may look weird at first, but then most people in a club will want end up wearing it. For instance, why are you wearing sunglasses in a club? It's at night, right? Wear sunglasses. And literally, I guarantee by the end of the night, people will be taking it, putting it on themselves, taking pictures with it. Wear a hat. Paint your nails, but only paint like three of them. Paint them black. Paint them three of them. Because then people are going to ask, why did you do that? And then just make up a story. Like that was like peacocking. So, and honestly, I was like, this is the stupidest, but there's no way any of this will work. No way. Absolutely. By the way, this is before I met Maurice. Before. And literally, I was like, this will not work. So I would go and I would try to do some of these things that was said in the book and it would work. And I'd be like, I cannot believe that these things are working. Like for instance, they go, say you're having a hard time, you know, thinking of something to say. I usually don't, but if you're having a hard time, play a game with them. And they're like, what's the game? All right. The game is all three of you think of a number between 1 and 10, 7.
Whoa.
Did I get any of them?
Yeah. Five. Mine.
Kofi.
6.
E?
5.
Okay, so the game is that a lot of times people will pick 7. Like it's just a thing. And so then you create a game out of that. And then you go, and then say, I got it wrong. Like, E, I got it wrong. I would guess again. I'd be like, all right, is your number 3? You're like, no. Is it 4? Yes. Oh, it's 4. Oh, man. Wait, what? What's wrong with 4? Well, you know, 7 is the most like artistic, very different, but out there, very outgoing, fun, loving. You know, 1, 3, and 5 are like you're regular people. If someone says 4, like, well, no, what? Like, it's just, you know, it's not the best number to get. And so, literally, that's how, like, and that would work every single time. And so, you'd start talking about it. Like, I learned how to cold read people, like, because they said cold reading works, and I was like, this does not work. and you just generalize everything. So I would tell a person where they're from without even knowing where they're from, but by guesstimating, like, ah, you know what? You're from the South, aren't you? Well, yeah. You have like a Texas, Louisiana, Florida kind of vibe. And they'd be like, oh my God. So I'm already there. So then I'm like, yeah, and I'm thinking like, and literally it's like and I'm saying this and I read it. It's the stupidest stuff that works. So I was supposed to play. So when I get into character and people tell me this is your character, this is what you should try to portray, I got totally into it. I would read everything about it. There's this guy called Mystery that would wear hats and like look like a big goth guy. He was like 6'10", long hair, like put eyeliner on his eyes, painted his nails. And literally he was like the main character in the game. And so I kind of derived my character off of that because I was the quote unquote chick magnet. So it just goes to show how I really get into my characters. Like I remember when I came back from doing the Marine Four, I said I wanted to be the biggest movie star that only does like D-list movies, that only does like straight DVD movies. And they were like, but how will that work? And I go, look, I want to play this. So I would watch a bunch of like interviews with like Tom Cruise talking about Scientology. And I'd be like, this is what, like, look at his demeanor and like how he's speaking. Like, I remember one of the lines was like, look, you don't understand. Like, I see a person pulled over on the side of the road and I know I have to stop and help them because I'm the only one that can. And I'm like, that's like almost a direct quote from something he said in this. And I go, listen to this, like, watch this video. This is who I want to emulate and create. I want to be, but obviously he's an A-list actor who has huge, huge movies. I don't, but I want to act like I do. And that will infuriate people and people will be really pissed off about it. And it worked. And then I said, hey, I also want a stunt double. I want someone that comes out and does all my matches for me. And I sit down and go, like as I'm about to do the match, I go stunt double. And then literally a stunt double comes in and does my match for me. Then they said, hey, Damian Sandow will be your stunt double. And he ended up doing so well on the outside of mirroring everything I did that it backfired. Everything. Like, I was getting my butt whooped. Like, I would do tag matches by myself, but he would get all the pops. He would get all the, and I go, this guy is a genius, an absolute genius.
I forgot we had tag matches with you guys, bro. And they were incredible. So they were so fun. Entertaining. So but fun. You're right. You would do all the work and he would Everything. Come in and get the pops. Yes.
That's what you're not understanding. Like, the idea was that I wasn't going to do anything. I would have to sit back and let my stunt double do it. But Damian Sandow is such a creative genius that literally he switched it on me. And like, I was like, oh my God.
When we do those matches overseas and E would have somebody held up and then you know, you'd be like the rib breaker and Sandow would lay in the ropes as if he was held like that too, held perpendicular. My God, some of the funniest things. But that's what I love about wrestling. And again, like your mind in the business, you're able to understand those aspects. Like, yes, moves are cool and all this stuff is cool. But like, what do you see that you recognize that you can essentially like generalize about me just from like my outfit? Can you understand what I'm going to portray when I speak just from my outfit? Okay, we got that. Now, can I back that up with how I speak? Now, can I back that up with my actions? And then the last point of the picture is, okay, let's have a wrestling match. And I feel like you're one of the main guys of this era who has that like down to a T.
I don't know what it is. It's very difficult. I just have a punchable face. Like people love to hate me. Even when they like me, they love to hate me. It's just more fun to dislike me. So I've always had a problem with like getting people to cheer me and like me and keep it going because you're supposed to just stay the same. If people are cheering you as a bad guy, then just do it as a good guy. What you're doing, the same stuff. But sometimes my stuff doesn't work like that. I don't know. You guys tell me.
It's, I agree with you. It's, you're acting the same. You're just punching a different person. That's pretty much what it is. But I think that people have so much equity in hating you that it's almost like switching like, so, okay. So I can't switch off iPhone because I've spent what a decade of money in the app store. I'm in, I'm already in. Mm-hmm. So I think that's how they look at you. It's like, man, we just love hating them so much. I mean, we support you, but
you better make me mad at you.
Yeah. And trust me, I love it. I love pushing buttons. Like, I'll push a button all day, every day. So I will figure out new ways to upset people, make them hate me, and just be absolutely obnoxious, which is not very hard for me.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's a trait, though. It's a talent. You know what I mean? Like, it's a natural talent. It's a gift in a weird way because, like, you know, everyone can't do that. And I think that's one of the things that, like, I appreciate about, like, working with you, especially over the years, is that the match structure is always easy because people do what they're supposed to do. Like, you're never like the guy who, you know, sometimes you have some heels out there who people start cheering for, you know, and now the babyface has to figure out a way to, like, get them to cheer for. I feel like you, they're always booing you no matter what. Like, so it's just like, I always appreciate that, you know, just because it just makes it an easier story to tell, you know, like, I don't really have, I can go out and do my thing. You do your thing. And people leave with the emotions that we want them to leave with. Not that that's always like the way to do it or anything, but it just makes it a lot easier when you don't have to think about, like, oh God, now they're cheering for the bad guy. What are we going to do to make them, like, boo this guy? You never have to worry about people booing you. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, some people don't like to be booed. Like, some people will go on Twitter and see, like, you suck, you can't wrestle, and take that to heart. Me, I look at that as compliments. Yeah. Like, when I see people telling me how terrible I am, how horrible I am, how terrible a wrestler I am, how unathletic I am, how I shouldn't be doing the figure four, how I'm not technically sound, how, you know, I'm too loud, I'm too obnoxious, I'm too slow, I'm too fat, I'm not big enough, I'm not ripped enough. Like, anytime I see anything like that, I take it as a compliment because I'm making people react and I'm making people do exactly what I want them to do. Some people can't do that. Some people don't like that and take it too much to heart. And honestly, another thing is, I also look at it as, like, if they're doing that to me and telling me, you know, I suck and I'm terrible, well, then maybe I'm taking that away from, you know, a kid that might get that tweet, you know, or something like that. So, like, I always look at it with, like, you know, great. Good. Please tell me I suck because I can take it. But some kids, you know, in high school or elementary school or middle school probably can't, you know, they don't have the confidence that I have. So it's kind of one of those things.
Damn, Mrs. Dark Knight.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the underdog.
My God.
As I bring this around full circle. I'm the underdog in WWE too.
I think one of the things too that I really appreciate about you too is that you do a really good job with pairings. And one of my favorites, we had the one match, the mixed match challenge. We just had one match, me and Carmella, and that was so much fun. But for some reason, I would never think before this that you and Asuka would work. It doesn't make any sense. But for some reason, like, everything you guys did together, it was one of the most enjoyable pairings. And then did you end up winning that year?
Yeah, we won that year. It was honestly like, it was a random pairing. I don't even think I've ever talked to Asuka before we started working together on the Mixed Match Challenge. And all of a sudden they're like, yeah, you're with Asuka. And we start talking, and honestly, she didn't understand what I was saying. I didn't understand what she was saying, but some way, somehow we just clicked. Like, it's like wrestling, speaking wrestling is a completely different language than English and Japanese, you know, it's different. And when we came together, we would just speak wrestling wise and we would understand each other. And she is so good at going off of something. Like, she can feel an emotion and be able to relay that. And, like, so it would always be like, I don't know. We would just figure out, all right, what's our characters? Let's see why are we together and what we can do to make it fun. And that's exactly what we did. And I had a blast working with Asuka. It was so much fun.
Like you're saying, you're just, a man of many talents, many skills. You're all over the place. We are unfortunately out of time with you today. But before we wrap, I'd love for you to let people know about Cannonball, however you'd like to tell them.
All right. Well, Cannonball is every Thursday on the USA Network, 8/7 Central. It is the biggest, wettest, wildest water sports competition in history. And honestly, and that's the tagline, but in reality, like, I look at it as something that the family can sit down and watch and literally just laugh at, because there's so much drama in this world right now. And I feel like sometimes you just need an outlet, even if it's just for an hour, and it's an effortless watch, and you'll laugh and you'll watch some big, big crashes. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's highly entertaining. And before I go, by the way, I wanted to say thank you, Woods, because I loved your history part one.
Oh,
I never knew about Seneca Village. That is incredible. It's that Central Park. Like I've been to Central Park. I don't know how many times. Like I mean, when I was on the Real World back to New York, that's where we would go to get away from the cameras. Like literally go there and it's beautiful. It's wonderful. But like, I never realized that that was, I didn't even heard of Seneca Village until you did that. And I can't wait for your part two. And the way you did it, by the way, was just, it was so informative and fun to listen to and hear. It's not like a teacher teaching me. It's like a friend saying, dude, this is what this was. Check it out. I'm just spewing some knowledge. Here you go, blah, blah. And I was like, wow, it like blew my mind. It was so cool.
Thanks, man. It's something that me, Ian, Kofi have all been talking about for a little while. Because you're trying to figure out different ways to make sure that people understand historical things that have happened. Cause like, I didn't know about Seneca Village either. I think it was E sent us a thread that this guy put on Twitter, just talking about all of these towns that were made by Black people that just ended up getting destroyed and swept under the rug. And then the winners write the history books. So we don't know about all of these types of things. And so, we're just going to do a string of some videos talking about these towns and then some of the unfortunate massacres that occurred.
I remember listening to your guys's podcast. And then E was talking about the Tulsa massacre. And I had no idea about that either. Like, it was just, I love what you guys are doing because it's educating me in a, I wouldn't say like, oh, fun way, you know, but it's like, it's educating me in a way that I want to learn rather than like being like this. It was like, hey, what about this massacre? What about Seneca Village? And then the way you guys do it, it's just so well done. So I appreciate that.
Appreciate it, man. In closing. What else is going on with you? Can you give us some info about Ms. and Mrs.? All this is just your time to plug everything.
We have 14 new episodes coming this fall. We just got done shooting them. And if you enjoyed my dad at WrestleMania, where he got in the ring and got his butt whooped by Shane McMahon, then you are absolutely going to love him on this show because we said Marjo was our breakout season one star. My dad is season two breakout star 100% because all he does is make fun of me the entire season. So if you want to see me get roasted for 14 episodes by my father, it's definitely a show for you. But also I love this show because I get to watch my daughters grow. And like Monroe was born on the show. And now I have these amazing moments with my daughter that are shot and edited perfectly. So it's like, it's incredible to see. It's like my own family album of just show. So I love that. What else am I doing? WWE, SmackDown on WWE on Fox. I mean, there's no other show like it. You got a Big E singles run coming for you.
Come on.
Uh-huh.
Come on.
How are you liking this right now, Big E, by the way? There's no, like, Kofi's was very, very organic and it was very audience driven.
Right.
This one's a little tougher to do. So not necessarily tougher to do, but it's a different element that you have to do. So how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, no, it's a good opportunity for sure. And I feel like one of the beautiful things is people have been so supportive, but a lot of this is kind of, in many ways, coming out of nowhere in the sense that all we did was had a backstage where I said I was going to do some singles. And now like it's in many ways kind of ballooned too much. Like to even compare it to Kofi's run kind of seems wrong, even though I understand where you're coming from, because he was world champion. And like you said, it had the support of the people. So it is very different because ideally, you want to be able to go out in front of a live crowd and say, this is working because people are losing their minds on a daily basis, on the live events every single night. So it's definitely very unique for many reasons.
You feel the momentum. Like when I was going for the WWE Championship, I felt the momentum. I imagine Kofi felt the momentum. Like you feel something is happening and it's magic. You can't explain it. There's nothing that you can actually explain. But do you feel different? Do you think, okay, This could lead to the moment.
I get that feeling just by my only real barometer is Twitter and like Instagram. That's it. And I feel like there's been an outpouring of people who've been supportive. And I've done some interviews with different outlets where there are a lot of people who there's a lot of people who are putting these expectations on it. And in many ways for me, it seems a little premature, but I like that people feel this could be more than just, hey, you're doing some singles matches for a little bit until the group's back together and then you'll go back to normal. I like that there are expectations, but it's just different because like you said, like you can, when you're in the arena, you know when something is good, you have that immediate feedback from fans to tell you this is good or this sucks. And we don't have that right now. So it's very different and unique. But I'm looking forward to it. But I just, it's a very different feel.
Yeah. And Woods, how's the wheel?
It's getting there. It's getting there. It's feeling way better than it did when I
toured. The itch?
You know, I definitely do feel the itch as I get closer and closer to coming back. So it's, I try to not listen to it too much because I don't want to like try to rush myself back, but it's definitely there and starting to scratch on the door a little bit. It's like, you know, you leave your cat outside the bedroom and you just hear that clawing. It's just a little bit right now, but it's starting to get a little loud in the headpiece, you know?
All right. Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for having me on the show. Always love all your work. You guys are so entertaining, so fun, so athletically gifted. Unlike me and Kofi, you're very good at basketball, and I will beat you. So
I wouldn't go that far.
I'm going to beat you 100%. Next time, whenever we can travel, and literally, you guys can come to my house and we'll play on my 7-foot hoop. You're going to see me pulling out some old school Sean Kemp.
I'm going to
be like Vince Carter up in there.
Yes, yes.
Slam them down. What?
Miz, where can they find you on socials?
At Mike the Miz on Twitter and Instagram. Definitely check it out. And yeah, that's it. Thanks, guys.
Of course, you can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at Xavier Woods, PhD.
Catch me on Instagram at The True Kofi and at True Kofi on the Twitter. Yeah.
And I am at WWE Big E on Twitter and on Instagram. But anyways, that's it for me.
Yes.
That's all I got.
Oh. So before I do, I forgot that I got something to show you. I got it. You know, here. Let me just.
Oh.
If it's his if it's his up, up, down, down title, just to flaunt it at me, I'm be very upset.
Let's see what he's got there, Miz. Hold on now. Let's see what he's got.
He hid behind his.
What did he find? My guitar that's signed by you, Kofi?
What is this? Oh, my. What do we have here?
Ah, Michael. Michael.
Oh, this. Wow. You know, you could have ended. You could have ended on a high note. Like.
I got this down off my wall just so I could bring it to you and show you.
What is it?
This is the Intercontinental Championship that I took from Miz. And if you want to hear that story, you got to wait for part two of Miz to be back on. But long story short, I beat the Miz and he had to take this title off of his wall and give it to me.
Yeah. And I had to videotape myself taking it off the wall. And yeah, I've tried to get it back numerous times, but ended up losing more than, I mean, there you have more. Didn't you lose my other two?
No. This is the one that you thought I lost.
No, the United States Championship you lost as well. No,
the U.S. title's on my wall. So I have pictures. These titles are hung on my wall, and I have pictures of screenshots from you handing them to me. It's very special. But again, we'll go into that on part two.
We'll do that on part two. All right. Thank you. Well, thanks for leaving it on a down note. Remember like when we said whenever we lose in up, up, down, down, we have knots in our stomachs. Thank you for ruining my week. I appreciate it.
It's determination for next time.
Next time. It's on. Yes. Marble Madness. Let's go.
Yes, hell yeah. Make sure you guys are checking out. Oh, E, shirts.
Yes. Make sure to check for our New Day podcast shirt at WWE Shop. Also, we have a charity tee. You can check the link in my Instagram bio. And all the proceeds go to the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. I think last time I checked was a few days ago. We're at 866 shirts sold. So thank you so much for everyone who supported. That's we're at least $8,000 that'll go to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. So it's a dope shirt. And also I got to shout out my man at D-O-R-O-W-O-T on Instagram. He's the artist who painted the original and then we made shirts off of it. So very thankful for Julius Hutchins. That's the name of the artist. But yeah, you can cop those two shirts.
Nice. So if you enjoyed this podcast, which we know you did, because we know that you love The Miz, make sure you're telling your friends to listen to it wherever they listen to their podcast. Just go to the search bar, type in The New Day, click the pink picture with the three black guys' faces on it, and subscribe. Thank you for listening. See you next time.